Okay, well, thanks very much for that introduction. I was really happy to be invited to come to this evening. Work, car, where to start? I just say a little bit about what's been going on for me recently. My mother died recently, actually, just about a week ago, and it's quite a strong experience, and it's just thrown up lots of emotions, some that one might expect, and some that one doesn't expect, actually. But one of the things that's come out of it is a sense of, just how important life is, and not to waste any time. That doesn't mean you need to try and fit lots of things in, but it's just, for me, it just made me reflect how I spent my time, and the quality of attention, the quality of my mental states that I bring, and not to waste that time in the sense of distraction. It made me feel actually what work I do, how I spend that time, which for most of us is not just a short amount of time, it's quite a large part of our lives are involved with work and occupation, earning a living. It's really important, I think it's really important. I came up with this title, what's work got to do with spirituality? What does Buddhism have to say about that? What does Buddhism have to say about work? So I'm going to look at that from a number of angles. I'd like to explore it in three principal ways. So, what did the Buddha say about Labdhi? Firstly, I'd like to explore things in terms of what is right livelihood from a Buddhist perspective. Then there's not only what we do, but there's how we do it. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So what do we bring to the work we do? How do we approach work? And then finally, why? What meaning does work have for us? The intention we bring to the work affect our mental states, affect our work? So the what, how, and the why. But first I'll say a little bit about, where does right livelihood fit in terms of the Buddhist teaching? So a little bit of traditional teaching to begin with. So many of you will know of the Eightfold Path, which is one of the earliest teachings of the Buddha. It's said that the Buddha taught the Eightfold Path soon after he was enlightened. Right livelihood is the fifth limb of that series. It's there right at the beginning of the Buddha's teaching. The Eightfold Path is said to be, you can divide that into the path of vision. The first element of the Eightfold Path is perfect vision, or right vision, and then the remaining seven stages are summarized as being the path of transformation. So basically, what the Eightfold Path is, it starts very much with a vision of human existence, what we can become as human beings. It starts through an awareness of us as humans and what we can achieve. And obviously, the Buddha presents an example of the ideal of what can be achieved by all of us. So right livelihood is placed within this path of transformation. It's a key element. It's there at the beginning. It's the fifth limb, so it's not right at the end. It's quite an important part of what the Buddha taught. So you could say the right livelihood is about transforming work. I like that. It's quite a good summary. So transforming work. Well, that has two elements. You could interpret that phrase in two ways. There's work that transforms us, so we can be doing work, can be something which helps us to be transformed for the better or for the worse. So in some sense, the work environment affects us. So whatever we do, what is out there, to some extent, we are a recipient of the atmosphere and the work we do, and the work will affect us. But transforming work also suggests that we can change work. You know, we can bring something to the work environment and actually change it as well. So throughout this talk, I was thinking there are both those two elements. There's being aware of how the context in which we work and what we're doing affects us and our mental states and our future, as it were. But we can also actively engage. And so both those elements are important, I think, in considering right livelihood. So, yes, I said that right livelihood is important. It's there in the Buddhist teaching. But just on a sort of just examining work, it seems important two things came to mind first. The first thing is it takes up quite a large part of our lives. You know, it's not just like brushing your teeth, which takes a couple of minutes. We're there 7, 8, sometimes 9 hours, and we might commute to work. So it's a large part of our daily life. So it's a big part. So I think even if it wasn't anything else, it's worth really looking at our work in that way. It's going to be the thing that we're conditioned by lots of factors, our upbringing. But our work will really strongly condition us. So our work influences who we are now, and it influences who we become. Yeah. And that can be for both positive and negative. I remember Sankaracharya points out that, you know, you see some people who are really conditioned by work in a negative way. People who've had to maybe do work which has a lot of drudgery in it or heavy labouring work that actually has a negative effect. So, we really need to consider work from that perspective. But also, the second thing that came to mind is how we engage with work. The work is quite important to us. It isn't just a way of earning a living. Maybe that is for some people, but it's often more than that. And we bring a lot to the work context. And it connects with our identity, how we see ourselves. And it also can connect with status. You know, certain jobs have a status in society, and that can affect us. So all those things of how we view work and how we see ourselves, that comes into the pot, as it were, of work. I'll say a bit more about that later, because I think this is an area where you can learn a lot of yourself, about yourself, through considering how you relate to work, reflecting on that, how and what you take to the work context. And in a way, there's something about work that reflects you back like a mirror, particularly where there are objective... Work brings an objective context. There are deadlines, you know. Shubhanaga, there's plans that need to be ready by certain dates because the builders are there on site. You know, there are demands. And that objective context, that objective situation can reflect you back. It can be very truthful, and sometimes that reflection isn't very kind. But it's something we can learn from. We can learn about ourselves, and we can learn about our personalities, who we are, what we bring to engagement with others. We can also see things more deeply as well. So there are two areas in which I think why work is important: the amount of time and what and the significance it has in our lives. So we certainly can't ignore work if we want to have a spiritual life, if we want to develop personally. We can't ignore work. It's something we need to consider. So next question: what does the Buddha have to say about right livelihood? Well, the truth is, not a lot, really. Or at least he says a lot indirectly, but he doesn't say that much directly. So first I want to say a bit about what we do. What does the Buddha have to say about what we do? Well, this is where the Buddha talks certainly about professions that we shouldn't involve ourselves in. So he talks about purveyors of poisons, and I think being a mercenary, and things like this. So the Buddha gave examples of things we shouldn't do. And in a way, you could say that the simplest way of saying what is right livelihood or what is wrong livelihood are things that harm other living beings. So it's other people, other animals and the environment. So that's the first teaching in a way. The Buddha said, well, what we do, we should do things which avoid harming living beings. So in a way, the wrong livelihood in that sense is fairly clear. Maybe we should avoid being a butcher or a mercenary or selling arms. I think we can go a little bit more in detail about what is wrong livelihood and what is right livelihood by being guided by the Buddha's teaching on morality, in particular, say, the five precepts. So we can look at the five precepts as a guide to whether a livelihood in itself is can be seen as right livelihood. So the first precept is about avoiding harming other living beings. Just to take an example. As I said, we should be avoiding things that damage the environment or harm other beings. And I think you can take this further in a way. I think the Buddha would entreat people not to engage in work that is exploitative of others in other ways. And I think you can look at that in a lot of depth. Almost everything we do, everything we buy or purchase has an effect. In some sense, the Buddha's teaching on right livelihood, it's in particular about right livelihood, but in a way it addresses the social aspect of our practice. It's about how our Buddhist practice engages with other people in the broader sense, as well as being in particular about work. So we should avoid occupations that extract things from other people. So what we buy, are the people we buy our clothes from, is that being exploitative? Is it not giving a fair wage to those people? All those considerations are important. And also there's an area of the fifth precept is avoiding intoxication. So I think we should be looking at our livelihood and say, well, does what we sell or the service we provide, does that enhance people's lives? Or does it distract people? Does it take them away from being in the present, from looking after themselves? The obvious things are avoiding selling drugs or things that do harm to other people. But there are other questions you could go into that. Products that actually distract people. There's a whole question about advertising. So some advertising, I wouldn't have it myself. Paint a sort of simple write-off advertising itself. Some advertising is actually just informing people of helpful things, but some advertising definitely promotes products or services through fear, or tempts people in ways to have things are harmful to them. So there are all these kind of considerations. I just sort of offer a smattering of those. So in this way, the Buddha's teaching is a perspective on looking at what we do and examining if that's right livelihood or wrong livelihood from that perspective. Of course, we can look at those sort of livelihoods that are wrong livelihood or right livelihood, or, sorry, wrong livelihood or right livelihood from a broad perspective. There are those that are obvious, like being a carer, or being a nurse or whatever, those things are obviously, you know, really helping people, as long as they're approached in the right way. But most jobs are in a way fairly neutral. What about being an accountant? That's certainly not necessarily wrong livelihood or right livelihood. It depends on the context. So in a way, most of our jobs are not strongly either wrong livelihood or right livelihood in themselves. But certainly, it's the context that makes a difference. So that in a way moves us into the sort of second perspective that I want to look at. So we'll look a little bit about what makes right livelihood or wrong livelihood. But what about how we approach it? And I think this is quite key in a way. So in particular, it's what attitude do we actually bring to our work? And I think how we attend at work, how we attend, we're aware of ourselves, we're aware of others, really makes a difference. Work is an opportunity to bring mindfulness to that kind of context. Where I used to work in Windhorse Trading, which was years ago, sometimes we had a little bell. People used to ring the bell through the day, and there was an opportunity to stop and just come back to yourself and try and bring mindfulness to what you're doing. So there are little practices like that. So we can take work as an opportunity to practice. So for example, you might decide to stop complaining at work. I've been in a lot of places that there's a lot of complaining, real lot of complaining, real heavy complaining. So anyway, I'm not going to complain anymore. But you could take on to just say, okay, I'm going to stop complaining. And maybe you could decide to develop the opposite. So you might say, okay, well, maybe I'll just try and, when I see something done well, I'll just, you know, not make a big deal of it, but I'll praise people. I'll say, oh, thank you, I appreciate you doing that for me. That can make a real difference to the atmosphere, which helps other people, but it also helps ourselves. It can change an environment. So again, this is something where when I was working in Windhorse Trading, we sometimes took on individual precepts. So they're little things like saying, okay, I'm going to, well, it could be negatively, I'm not going to complain, but it might be, okay, well, I'm just going to, at least every day, I'm going to praise someone or just say thank you for something. You know, look out for one thing a day. And that can have an effect. I know it's had an effect on me, and it's a way of practicing and changing behaviour. And in a way, it's about instilling a positive habit at work, you know, because we are creatures of habit. We're a lot of things we do, and to change it means working on one or two areas at a time. So maybe taking on a personal precept as an example of how we can bring change our attitude at work and get more out of work, really. So in this way, we can make work that is maybe more neutral from a broad ethical point of view, we can make it more right livelihood. We can move our work to be more right livelihood. I think it's useful to acknowledge that you can't always do this. Some work environments are supportive. You know, there are people who would respond positively, some aren't. So there are, one has to be aware that there are sometimes limitations. But wherever you are, even in the most difficult situations, I think there's always an opportunity to practice in some way. Even if that practice is just patience, it's just like, okay, just being there, being present, and one of the things over the years practicing right livelihood myself, I noticed is that this thing about the work reflecting back what you need to work on. It definitely works like that. Again, you need to pay attention to say, well, what is my work telling me? I'm looking at Gina down there because I know this is really big when you're doing an appeal. You're knocking on people's doors and asking for money. And that's not an easy thing, is it? Not easy at all. But what you bring to the door knocking really makes a difference. And you don't have to be all happy and jolly necessarily. You have to be present and you have to allow in that situation to be present and respond to the person in front of you, not an idea of the person in front of you. I knew this one years and years ago when I tried to be a salesman. I was a bit of a failure, to be honest. I might be better now, but I really struggled, and the feedback is very obvious, you know, very it comes back to you, well, you don't get a sale, do you? And you think, well, what can I do about this? And anyway, I think I might be a bit better now. That was when I was in my 20s. Work can tell you things about yourself. If you bring that open, inquisitive and aware. And I think work can affect you. It can lead to your development in terms of awareness, of bringing kindness, metta. So there's opportunity to develop psychologically. And I also think there's things that sort of challenge you more deeply, you know. So there's more of a spiritual challenge. Maybe you think you're a particular way. You think that you're a particular kind of person. And the work tells you, well, maybe you're not like that. And that can go both ways. It can sometimes be that you might have an inflated view of yourself. And you know, maybe you think, I should be the manager. And you go around bossing people around, and you soon get the feedback that doesn't quite work. But it can be the other way around. It's like maybe you know you're in a role of, say, a manager, but you're a bit reluctant to just ask people in an appropriate way, what to do. In fact, I remember with a lot of gratitude when I first became a manager years ago, there was a good friend of mine who said, I'm just going to do what you ask of me. And I thought, that came as a bit of a shock. And he said to me, I can see you're afraid of asking people to do things, but I'm happy to do what you ask me. And he was fantastic. He's really, it's my friend from the city. He's a wonderful man. But he not only helped me and was very supportive in the work I was doing, but he in a way corrected a view. Because I wasn't bossing people around, at least most of the time anyway. But I needed to direct people, and he taught me to do that in a good way. How we work. That's how we work. Then why? Why do we work? What does the meaning? What meaning does it have to us? It's almost the importance of intention, you know. So there's a little story here. So someone, this investigator, went out and he met three different people. And he asked them what they were doing. So the first person said, I'm earning a wage, I've got to live, I'm earning my money. So the second person said, I'm supporting my family. I've got a couple of kids, you know, we need money. And what I'm doing here is doing that. I'm supporting my family. So the third person said, I'm building a temple. I'm building this temple, and it's really important to me. Well, of course, you might have guessed it by now, but all those three people were doing the same thing. Yeah. So what is the meaning of our work depends on what kind of context, what it means to us. Why are we doing what we're doing? So if that's the case, well, we can look at it. Why are we doing? What are we wanting to get out of what we're doing? So I think the why is important too. I mean, I was just thinking this in relation to, say, you might be working in a lab or something and you're doing a really boring, repetitive trials of a drug or something. Very, in a way, often that lab work is very repetitive. But if in the context you say, you may be coming up with a cure for a cancer here, And that's going to really make a difference to what you're doing and how you're doing, and the meaning of the work and your engagement in it. So this I think leads us into, you know, well, does work reflect the values we have, our deepest values, you know? And are we able to are we able to live out our values within our work context? In a way, I think, talking about these other things, the benefits of work and the benefits you can get from them, to some extent, depend on how wholeheartedly you can engage in those things. You know, to be wholehearted and to work in an integrated way, work in a way that actually brings our different varied selves together in a wholehearted way, well, it does mean we need to be doing something that we value. So there's a kind of a reflection there around, what is it we're doing and what do we bring to it and what does it mean to us? So it's nearly been half an hour, so I'll just wind up with a couple of things, if I may. So we've talked a little bit about the ethical considerations about what we do that determines whether, you know, is it right livelihood? Is it something that helps our spiritual development? And we talked a bit about the environment in which we work and what we bring to that work context. And then there's why. What meaning does it have to us? But it is tricky, isn't it? Because sometimes we can't find work that isn't that meaningful to us. And it's interesting in here, in this case, Sangharakshita, initially when he talked about right livelihood, he said, if you can't find work that has that something of a vocation or fulfills something, a value to you or others, then there's an argument to work as little as possible, you know, to live a simple life and to just earn what you need to. So I think lastly, I'm just having a look at my notes here. Yeah, I think lastly, I want to just talk a little bit about something that's been developed in Tree Ratna over the years called team-based right livelihood. So I focus, this talk has mainly been about right livelihood. But for me, my experience, I feel very fortunate. In my 20s, I was able to work with other Buddhists, work with other like-minded people. And in a way, what I felt we were developing over that period, since my 20s, was how to work in a team. And what I found working in teams really helps and really promotes work being a spiritual practice, something that helps us to transform ourselves. And actually helps other people as well. How does that work? Well, firstly, it's working with like-minded people means that they're supporting you. So I mentioned earlier about you might take on a particular precept at work. Well, in a team of like-minded people, other Buddhists, you can, well, not necessarily other Buddhists, but people who understand you, you can actually talk about that. Say, well, I'm trying to do this, I'm trying not to complain. So people can help you, you know, hopefully not take the piss too much when you fall away. But it's great to have other people who you can talk about and feel that they're supporting your practice. That makes a real difference. And also I really benefited from people just giving me a little bit of feedback at work. That's another thing about work, that because you're there, the work brings out all sorts of different things about a person. I've been on retreat with people and you see a certain aspects of themselves, maybe that you didn't see outside the retreat context. But also in the work context, sometimes you see things you don't see when people are on retreat. You see the whole range of their emotions. And so I found it useful, people feeding back, in who you are. You find out a bit more who you are. And being in a team, when you're working with other people who want to make work a practice as well, they do that in a kind, generally in a kindly way. They don't do it in such a hard way as the feedback you get in other contexts. So, yeah, team working in teams, I think, is something that I've really appreciated, I really feel grateful for. So, and a team, particularly a team with a common goal, common principles, and common friendship. There's a lot more I could say about teams, and I think, for me, it's very much an exploration. I said at the beginning, the Buddha didn't say that much about right livelihood. There are a lot of principles, but not details. And in some ways, that's a downside. There's a downside to that, but another way, there's advantage. It feels fresh, and it feels like I still feel after 30 years of practicing in that context. I still feel there's things to learn. It still feels like an exploration. It still feels like, how can we make, particularly in, you know, today, it's a different, very much different context in the Buddha's time. How can we make our work today a spiritual practice? But I do believe we can, and I do believe, you know, the Buddha's ideas and principles give some guidance to that. And I do feel actually that Sri Ratna's made some progress in that over the years, and that gives me confidence to engage with it myself still, and to promote right livelihood in general, and in particular team-based right livelihood. So I'll leave it there. I've spent a little bit more than my 30 minutes, but yeah.